back up the wing, and here's Backes with a shot. He scores! David Backes, and it's 4-0.
From the faceoff, Nashville plays it out to center. And here's a loose puck. It's Couture! Scores! Seventh of the playoff for Logan Couture.
Doc Emrick, Chris Cuthbert with the respective calls from two of the goals in two of the worst Game 7s ever between the Blues and the Stars and then the Sharks and the Predators. The Blues and the Sharks victorious. They're off to the Western Conference Finals, which begins tomorrow. We, of course, just spoke with Andy Strickland. Coming up at the next segment, Ray Ratto from CSN Bay Area is going to join us to give us the Sharks' perspective. Those were two awful Game 7s there, Rich. You know, it's sort of hard to decide who had the worst of Game 7. You know, was it Kari Lehtinen? Was it Shea Weber? Was it Roman Josi? Was it Pekka Rinne? It was a real good battle there for just who was worse for their team in those Game 7s.
Yes, it was. Those were two terrible Game 7s. I mean, first off, you had the new national broadcaster thinking enough of the Game 7s to not even send their own crew.
Yeah.
Which is embarrassing.
Yeah. We talked about that with Dave Schultz last
week.
Yeah,
we talked about it with Dave Schultz. It's just crazy. The games themselves were off. I mean, Kari Lehtinen was beyond terrible. I mean, keep in mind that they called a goal off on the offside that might have been the worst goal of the bunch.
Yeah.
Got lucky on that one. He was letting in things that he was letting in goals that you don't let in on the Saturday Rec League.
Yeah.
Seriously. And the guy's so talented, but Mike Hockey came on the show but halfway through this year and he said the problem with Kari Lehtinen is between his ears. It's a confidence. It's upstairs. It's not a physical ability for him, for sure not. So athletic, he's got the skills to be as good as anybody, and he just isn't able to put it together. To me, that's more significant, Drew, because you know that Weber and Josi are going to be back in Nashville playing big minutes next year. I don't think Jim Neal will come back with that combination. I'm almost positive Jim Neal will not come back with that combination next year in Dallas, which makes, I guess, more significant that way, at least for his career.
And we'll talk more, of course, about the Stars and the Preds and when we look at their postmortem coming up in the third hour. So let's focus on the two teams that did prove to be victorious in those Game 7s, the Blues and the Sharks. You can call this the monkey off the back Western Conference Finals, as both of these two teams have proven some of their doubters wrong to get this far. One of these teams going to advance to the Stanley Cup Finals. Of course, it would be the first time for the Sharks, and it would be the first time since, I believe, 1970 for the St. Louis Blues.
That's the Bobby Hall goal? Bobby Orr goal?
I believe so. That would be the Bobby Orr goal.
Who was the Blues coach for that game, Drew?
I have no idea, Rich.
I believe it was Scotty Bowman.
We can look that up. I'll tell you what. We'll look that up coming up right here. So the Blues and the Sharks. Do you see there? And these two teams, you look at them, and there's a lot of depth up front. There's a lot of depth on the back end. The goaltending, both goalies have played very well in these playoffs. Martin Jones, who has never really been there. This is his first time as a starting goaltender in the playoffs. And Brian Elliott, who's always had a lot of question marks around him, mm-hmm. and he's maybe answering a lot of his doubters in this playoffs. Yeah, certainly
he's
answering them, I guess. So how do you, two very high-scoring teams, the two highest-scoring teams left in the playoffs, how do you see this series playing out between the Blues and the Sharks?
Yeah, and very well-coached. I think it's going to be extremely close. I would give... Yeah. I'm picking the St. Louis Blues, Drew, in the series. I already told you guys that off air. But I could easily see the San Jose Sharks winning this series. And before the season started, before the regular season started, not the playoffs, I didn't pick the Sharks to make the playoffs. And each round, I've picked the San Jose Sharks to win because there's something about this team. And I talked about this in the Kings series. I really feel like this group, the core group of this team, really does have a chip on its shoulder, I guess, if that's proper English. I don't really speak proper English, but the San Jose Sharks now, you mentioned that it's kind of the monkey off the back series. It's also, as you mentioned, both teams would be winning their first Stanley Cup if they do go that far.
Mm-hmm.
But, the way Joe Pavelski, with the C on his chest now, has taken over this team, and Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau and Joel Ward are kind of the secondary veteran scoring, and it's really Couture and Pavelski that are leading the charge, along with Brent Burns on the back end there with Edward Vlasic. And Rich talked about it prior to the playoffs. The San Jose Sharks defense, I think, was what was most underrated heading into the playoffs. Yeah. And you look at the Nashville Predators, with all the firepower, bringing in Ryan Johansson, Philip Forsberg was completely shut down. When you look at the Sharks after Burns and Vlasic, you've got Paul Martin, you've got Brendan Dillon, you've got some good defensemen there.
Justin Braun.
Justin Braun is a top-pairing guy for them. It's a very good team. Martin Jones hasn't been spectacular. I think if you want to give the edge to the Blues, they get the edge. Well, you could give them the edge in every position, but I think in goal and on defense especially. But the Sharks defensively have played very well as a unit. The Sharks' power play, Drew, was almost 40% against the Nashville Predators. And you saw that in Game 7. I mean, the San Jose Sharks' power play, the guys that they can trot out there with Pavelski and Burns and Marlowe and Thornton and Couture, you can throw a guy like Joel Ward in front of the net. This team can hurt you at 5-on-5 and on special teams. So it's going to be a big challenge for the St. Louis Blues. I think for the Sharks, what's going to be the biggest challenge is that the Blues are not the quickest team, but they can hurt you from the wings. They're very solid up the middle, a good faceoff team. You know, Laterra, Stastny, Steen, and Backes, they move those guys around a little bit from wing to center. But I think that this is a heavier team than any team they've played against. And I think that the physicality of the Blues at times is going to wear down.
Any heavier than
Sharks
the Kings?
A little bit. The Kings are a heavy team, too. Maybe not as heavy as they used to be, Rich. But yeah, sure, with Lucic and guys like that, and they're a heavy team. But I think
comparable for sure. I think they're very comparable.
I think the Sharks have gone through some tough series in the first two rounds. I mean, they you know, against the Kings, they were successful. But I mean, that was a big hurdle for them to overcome, right, Drew? Mm-hmm. So it's going to be an even series. I mean, this is not going to be, I think, a series that ends in five games. I think I have this one going in seven. I picked the Blues in seven. And just the contributions they're getting from the Fabry, Stastny, Brouwer line. David Backes, I think, is also a man that's possessed. I think he's a guy that year after year of not being able to beat the Chicago Blackhawks in the first or second round, I just feel like this team is ready to go to the Stanley Cup final, and I think it's going to be a fantastic series. I think we're going to see some overtime games. I think we're going to see a lot of one-goal games. I don't think you're going to see a lot of one-sided games in the series at all.
I agree, Ezzy. I'm going to take the Blues in seven as well. I think it is a tight series. I think when you look at the Sharks, I think the Blues' depth is a little bit better up front, 1 through 12. If you go one by one, you might like the Sharks players a little better at the top. I don't know. I mean, Pavelski and Tarasenko, you say they want to saw off each other. But I do like the Blues' depth a little better. I think the Sharks' defense is real good. I think the Blues' defense is really good. The goalies, to me, that's a good question mark. Not that they both haven't been good, but you know what I mean? You just never know. And the coaches, excuse me, I think here you have very good coaches. You know, Ken Hitchcock gets a lot of credit, and rightfully so. He's a very good coach. But Peter DeBoer is an excellent coach who doesn't get enough attention. We talked about the job he did with the Devils getting them to the final, the job he did before that in Florida. He's not a presence that attracts much attention, but he ought to receive more attention. I do think the Blues, though, their depth up front, amongst other reasons, I know we're up against it, Drew, is why I have them beating the Sharks in seven.
Right, Richie, and quickly here, the Sharks, that third line of Matt Nieto, Chris Tierney, and Joel Ward has been an excellent third line, but the third line for the St. Louis Blues right now, Patrick Berglund, Alex Steen, or David Backes, and we mentioned sometimes they have Backes at center, sometimes at wing. That third line could be a first line on many teams.
It can be.
Or Laterra, yeah.
Or Laterra. When we come back, Ray Ratto joins us to talk about the Sharks' perspective of the series. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Ten minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Ray Ratto. Ray is a columnist with CSNBayArea.com. Ray, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
How you doing?
Doing very well, Ray.
Is Ray still in Winnipeg covering the Grey Cup right now?
I was going to say, have you thawed out since the Grey Cup visit to Winnipeg?
The weather wear was very clement by Winnipeg standards, and I had a dandy time. Next time it's in your town, I'm coming.
We like that, Ray. You know you have a home here in Winnipeg. Obviously, Ray, we brought you on to talk about the Western Conference Final between the Sharks and the Blues. It gets underway tomorrow evening. You know, the Sharks for so many years have been the team that could just never get over that hurdle. They would lose the 3-0 series lead that they lost to the Kings. Then this year, they dispatch the Kings in 5, and they take care of business on home ice against the Predators in 7. You know, why is this San Jose Sharks team, which really isn't all that different on paper from previous teams, why is this team succeeding where other teams didn't?
Well, first of all, we're very excited about being part of the underachievers ball. St. Louis has the same narrative that's been dogging it, only for much longer.
Yeah.
But the difference between this San Jose team and the other ones, other than the fact that I think Peter DeBoer has basically had them play a different way, I think they're more sort of disciplined at both ends, is the fact that they picked up the kind of really useful depth that they've never had before. Paul Martin is probably the most important acquisition they've made, I would say, in 5 years, because he allows Brent Burns to be the most competent defenseman he can be, because he stays home while Burns goes off on his many forays up the ice. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Burns had his best year ever and is being mentioned as a possible Norris Trophy winner because of Martin. The second addition is Joel Ward, who is not only a very good third-line wing, he sort of gives them that sense that, you know what, you don't get to take shifts off. He almost never mails in a shift. And I think that's helped permeate the rest of the team. And finally, I think they finally, after 3 and 4 years of floundering around about how they wanted to designate leadership, they finally just gave the C to Joe Pavelski and just said, you know what? Here, you're in charge. And because Pavelski isn't a guy who, you know, runs the shop with an iron fist, but, you know, basically lets everybody know what their responsibilities are and how not to shirk them, there's no longer the agendas that there were a year ago and 2 years ago when Doug Wilson was in sort of semi-open warfare with Joe Thornton and, to a lesser extent, Patrick Marleau. So they've cleaned all that up, and they're just deeper. They have fewer guys who get regular time that can hurt them than maybe any other team they've had.
And, Ray, don't forget about the ageless wonder, Dinaya Zubras.
He is magic. I don't think there's any question there. He gives them that bit of Lionel Messi that they've always been looking for.
Ray, heading into game one of this series, what's the key matchup for you as far as the San Jose Sharks are concerned?
I don't know if there's a real key single matchup, because the thing that the Blues have better than anything else is that they may be the deepest team in hockey, as deep as the Sharks are. Mm-hmm. St. Louis, you know, probably the best 1-6 defense core in the league. All four of their lines have been rolling, and have been rolling not just in the postseason, but throughout. I think if there's a factor, and it's not really a matchup, it's in finding out if the Blues are a little weary after back-to-back 7-game series. It's really hard to go back-to-back with 7-gamers, especially when 4 of those are overtimes, because you start to wear down. Is it as good a shape as you're in? You know, you start, you know, those blocked shots start to take a toll, and those scrums in front of the net start to take a toll. So if there is something to watch for early, it's to see if the Blues are at all weary. They're not injured, but you know how, you know, bruises and bangs, you know, can start to accumulate. So I think that'll be the first thing to see, because if the Blues are good to go, as they have been most of the year, I think that'll put a lot of pressure on San Jose early to match that, because San Jose has had a much easier time of it. They handled the Kings, and genuinely handled them. And then, you know, 2 of their last 3 games against Nashville, they just routed the Predators. Mm-hmm. So there was not a lot of high-stress hockey on them.
You know, Ray, you talk about Pete DeBoer, and I found it interesting, at least at the end of Todd McClellan's tenure, he really seemed to throw it on the players, the responsibility. In interviews, he'd say, you know, it's up to them. You know, they know what they have to do. It's up to them. And you see Pete DeBoer, not that Todd McClellan would fly off the handle or that he was a bad coach, because he's not, but it seems like DeBoer's manner and the structure, you mentioned the structure that they play with, but also just his demeanor, kind of a quiet confidence, seems to be rubbing off on this squad.
Well, I think in some ways it's not so much the confidence. It's probably that it was a different voice. McClellan was there for a long time, mm-hmm. and I think as time went on, you know, he and Doug Wilson stopped being on the same page, and because they stopped being on the same page, that sort of filtered down into the room. With DeBoer, first of all, you know, he's been given, you know, the depth tools that McClellan never was. But the other thing is, I mean, he's not telling them anything that McClellan never did. I mean, McClellan, you know, saying all the same things and preaching all the same virtues that DeBoer is, but it's a different voice talking to a different room. And I think that's the difference.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ray Ratto is our guest discussing the San Jose Sharks. Ray is a columnist with CSNBayArea.com. Ray, for years with the Sharks and their playoff struggles, you could always point to goaltending, and be it, you know, Antti Niemi, be it Alex Stalock, it was never there. It was never good enough to get over that hump. This year, Martin Jones, he's 8-4 in the playoffs, a .918 save percentage, a 2.16 goals against. He's been the clear number one. You know, how important has that been from the Sharks' perspective to know that even if they have a defensive breakdown, they have a goaltender behind them who says, don't worry, guys, I got your back?
Well, I mean, the interesting thing about Jones is that he hasn't had to stand on his head. All he's had to be is solid. I mean, of the four goaltenders, his numbers, of the four goaltenders still left in the playoffs, his numbers are slightly worse than Brian Elliott's, mm-hmm. and much worse than Ben Bishop's, who is now, I guess, out, and Matt Murray. But what he is solid. He never gives in the really bad 65-foot howler. So they know that if he gets beat, it isn't because, you know, he failed to handle a puck behind the net or, you know, misread a shot. I mean, he just gives them solid, consistent goaltending, and that's the difference between him and Niemi and him and Evgeny Nabokov. And, you know, he's not a spectacular goaltender, but he's a guy who night in and night out doesn't take away your chance to win.
You know, Ray, I read your piece in CSN Bay Area, and you called San Jose's win in Game 7 an evisceration, and it really was. Mm-hmm. But when you talk about the Sharks team, and I agree with you, I think they disposed of the LA Kings quite easily in Round 1, but they haven't faced a ton of adversity as far as injuries or getting behind 3-1 in a series, something like that. But is that maybe actually going to be a benefit heading into the Western Conference Final?
I think the real benefits came in the way they played Game 7 after basically vomiting up Game 6, because Game 6 was the old Sharks narrative, come home to roost, you know, take the 2-0 lead, and then just decide your job is done and fritter it away. And that's been the biggest complaint about the Sharks in their long playoff runs. It's just, they can't finish because they think they're done before they are. And Game 7, they got in on the Predators right away, and they never let up. And that's what has been missing more than players, more than anything else. It's just the idea that the job isn't done until the scoreboard says it's done. And Game 7 was exactly what I think fans have been looking from them in the postseason. For upwards of 15 years, they wanted to see them, okay, if you're that good, be that good. Don't make us white-knuckle this. I mean, I think that team was scarred by the Kings series 2 years ago. But before that, I mean, their history's been replete with, you know, losing games they should have won, losing to teams they should have beaten. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are really only a few instances where, you know, they went into a series and lost to a better team. You know, very often it was a team that they could beat, but they didn't take care of the little things that have to get taken care of night in and night out. And that's why Game 7 of the National Series was so important.
Yeah, like Vancouver and Calgary in the past. Ray, you know, you can't quantify the pressure that goes along with this, but when the Sharks came into the playoffs, and, you know, the Blues, there are similar storylines. With the Blues, though, I look at that team and I say, well, you know, Ken Hitchcock, they lose in the first round to Chicago again, similar to San Jose playing L.A. Well, Ken Hitchcock is probably going to go, you know, him and Doug Armstrong are going to go their separate ways. David Backes is a free agent, some other changes that are going to take place there, you know, maybe an overhaul. You look at San Jose, and it didn't seem like the same expectations were placed upon the Sharks' shoulders. In reality, new coach, so he wasn't going to go anywhere. New goaltender, likely not going to go anywhere. And, you know, Pavelski, Burns, those guys going to stay the same. Was there less pressure, you think, on the Sharks than the Blues coming into the playoffs?
No, I in a way, I guess, only because the Sharks sort of slipstreamed behind Anaheim and L.A. most of the season. But there was a measure of pressure on the guys, on the core guys. Thornton, Marleau, to a lesser extent, Pavelski and Couture, because their playoff history is tied around those guys. Mm-hmm. And the window, certainly for Thornton and Marleau, is closing because they're just up there in years. So I think there was pressure on them to finish strong. I think there was pressure that Pavelski put on himself to be a real captain. There was pressure on Couture after he got hurt early on. There was pressure on Burns to prove that he could be a quality defenseman rather than just a guy who gets a lot of points and then gets left behind when the rush goes the other way. So I think there was a lot of player pressure. There wasn't a lot of pressure on DeBoer. And there might have been some pressure on Doug Wilson as well, because, you know, after 2014 and then basically the emotional bloodbath of 2015, mm-hmm. there was no guarantee that Hasso Plattner, the owner, was going to continue to tolerate that. So in a lot of ways, there was a lot of indirect pressure on the Sharks outside of the coaching staff. The coaching staff was the one thing that basically you didn't have to worry about pressure-wise. They were coming in, they were reassessing a team that, you know, had sort of dead-ended. So they were on scholarship. But everybody else, I think, had pressure on them to prove that this isn't the end of their run.
Final question for you, Ray. And we just asked Andy Strickland about this in St. Louis, a little bit different circumstances in that, you know, the Rams have left town and there's no pro basketball, and the Blues, the Cardinals are always big, but the Blues are really the only, you know, big time show in town in the playoffs right now. And he said that they're really, you know, getting a lot of attention. Look at San Jose. You know, it's not exactly in the same city as, you know, San Fran, but the same region, you know, as the Golden State Warriors, having a great season. Are the Sharks getting a lot of attention for this run to the conference finals?
No. And the reason why is because the Golden State Warriors have eaten the planet. It's the first time that the two teams have been in a conference final at the same time. And it is the Sharks' bad luck that they're playing up against a team that has the best player in its sport in Stephen Curry. Mm-hmm. So I think for the most part, I mean, they've gotten, I think, most of their fan base back after a year in which they did not sell out every game. In fact, sold out damn few of them. But I think now that the true hockey fans are back on board. But no, in terms of, you know, how much attention they're getting, the Warriors have taken a lot of that away just because what they did last year and this year, and the guy who leads them, Curry, who is he's as close to a national icon in sports as there is right now. And so, yeah, they're getting shaded a lot, but I think they understand that, and I think they're probably comfortable with it.
Ray Ratto is a columnist for CSNBayArea.com. He joins us to talk about the San Jose Sharks, the Sharks and the Blues. The Western Conference Final gets underway tomorrow evening.
Ray, maybe Steph Curry could play on the fourth line.
he's a little small for their needs, but, you know, he could be a good second power play point guy, I think.
There you go.
Because he does shoot from far away, and he's pretty good at it.
He is certainly good at it. Ray, thanks very much for joining us this morning. Really appreciate your time.
Okay, take care. Stay dry.
Take care, Ray. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. When we come back, we look at some of the teams that were not able to make it to the conference finals. The postmortems are up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Said, is it fair to say second and third goals were all soft?
You want him back. We don't, I mean, I think maybe it's on me. I think with the review and maybe looked like he got a little bit rattled. I should have taken him out sooner.
That's Dallas Stars head coach Lindy Ruff after the Game 7 embarrassment the Stars suffered on home ice. Kari Lehtinen was not good in net for the Dallas Stars in that game. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Richie, we had concerns from the start of the playoffs about the Dallas Stars goaltending, and I think those concerns manifested itself in that epic Game 7 collapse on home ice. Simply put, Antti Niemi and Kari Lehtinen were not good enough in the playoffs. So as we look at the Dallas Stars postmortem and the Nashville Predators postmortem for this season, this big burning question to me is, how do the Dallas Stars address their goaltending in the offseason?
That's a good question, Drew. I mean, is somebody taking one of those contracts off of your hands? Is somebody taking the Lehtinen or Niemi contracts off your hands? And
both under contract, yes, for the next two seasons. Yes. Lehtinen at $5.9 million, Niemi at $4.5 million.
Or are you buying out one of those players? Because to me, a logical landing spot for Marc-Andre Fleury is Dallas. But the problem is money. How do you make the money work? You can't have, you know, you can't have that much money coming in on the back end without moving it out.
Sure.
Are you going to do a buyout? I think that's a possibility here. Both Niemi and Lehtinen are 32 years old. It's odd. You'd think of Niemi as being older than Lehtinen. Not the case. So you look at the money on the books here. I mean, kind of what you're probably hoping to do is move Fleury out. Bring in a guy to replace one of those two guys and then hope one of those two guys gets claimed in the expansion draft next year. That's kind of, if you want it, for cap relief.
Sure.
But I don't know if they're going to try and sweeten the pot or take on somebody else's contract that's been an issue for them and try and swap. But I just don't think there is a way that they go back into next season with that duo.
Offensively, they're as good as anybody.
That's as bad of a performance as I've seen in net in a long time.
Yeah, because offensively, they're as good as anybody, and they performed that way without Tyler Seguin.
Yeah, I mean, that's arguably their best player.
Right, and top five player in the league, arguably. But
for sure.
You know. And so you have the offense. Your defense, which was a concern throughout the course of the year, it wasn't great, but it wasn't terrible in the playoffs.
No, I mean, I thought it was probably a little bit underrated. You know, smaller puck moving back in. The problem there, Drew, is this.
Mm-hmm.
They have two guys, or three of, I guess, the guys who ended the season on the back end, Johns, Oduya, and Klingberg, signed for next year. Mm-hmm. The rest are all free agents.
Alex Goligoski, a free agent. Jason Demers, a free agent. And Chris Russell, who they acquired at the trade deadline from Calgary, is a free agent as well. So is Jordy Benn,
who played a fair amount for them as well, and obviously Jamie Benn's brother. So
that's right. So you think that they'd want to take care of that. Now the question is, a guy like Julius Honka, who was a former first round pick of the Stars, able to take that next step and come into their lineup?
That's fine. That answers one of the three questions.
Lots of questions on the back end there.
They have two other holes they have to fill.
Right, but I think it does from the Dallas Stars perspective. It starts with the goaltending, right? And you're assuming that
it does, because up front, I mean, they're in good shape, right?
Sure.
So
the guys that are UFAs up front are, Travis Moen and Vernon Fiddler, guys who are at the downside of their career. Patrick Eves,
right? And Patrick Eves played really well at the end of the season there, mm-hmm, and the playoffs. But I think you have to look at also how Faxa and Janmark played in the playoffs, and that's going to be very encouraging for them both on minimum deals right now.
Sure.
Right, $8.63 million. Per year for Faxa, and Janmark's at
$7.33 million. And Valeri Nichushkin, who's an RFA, but he won't be able to ask for a lot because he's had injury concerns and he's been disappointing since he came over. And he had a promising rookie season, but since then it's been on the downward trajectory. So the so you're assuming that the Penguins, that Matt Murray's done enough that the Penguins have to look to move Marc-Andre Fleury out.
I don't say have to, but
probably
likely will. Remember there, Drew, then you're looking at another issue. We keep getting back to this hypothetical expansion.
Sure.
I mean,
you're saying in Pittsburgh, given that they probably a hypothetical expansion draft means that they would potentially lose one of.
You want to be able to turn it into an asset for sure. And with Fleury having a no move clause, that's still, again, hypothetical. But there's a very realistic possibility a no move clause doesn't allow for you to be exposed in the expansion draft.
Right.
Which would then allow for Murray, because of age, I believe.
He would be protected, I believe. He would still be able to be protected because it would end of his second professional season in the NHL.
I thought it was, and we have to get more deep
into
this.
The NHL, I don't think, has these details yet.
Right. That's why, that's why we're just guessing.
Yeah.
But that would be a concern. Again, I don't know if it's the end of the second year, the pro year, right?
Well, because it's the same sort of scenario as Connor Hellebuck. In that it would be his second year sort of playing NHL games, and he wouldn't have to be exposed.
But I just think that, so correct, you've corrected me there. I don't know, though. I think that's something that, if you look at just the Pittsburgh contract situation as well, how much money they have locked up here. Like for next year already, Pittsburgh's at $73 million cap hit.
Right.
Think about that.
Yeah, it's a significant amount of money that they look to move some guys off their books. And so you can see that. So Marc-Andre Fleury going to Dallas certainly changes that problem for the Stars if it ends up coming to fruition, of course.
Well, I think he's going to go somewhere.
Right, and you think it makes sense that there could be a matchup there. Let's look at the Nashville Predators, the other team that got blown out in that Game 7. You know, Pekka Rinne wasn't very good all season long. If you look at the regular season, he was much better in the playoffs than he had been in the regular season. And I think he still to some extent gets by on the reputation that he has.
I think you're exactly right about that.
You know, and that's fine. But to me, just as concerning or even more concerning than Pekka Rinne's performance was that of Shea Weber. Not only in Game 7 where he was awful, but he wasn't great in the playoffs or all season long, really.
I agree with you.
Okay, well, I'm glad we had the segment.
I know you've Ezzie leaves. Did we even address it as he left?
No, I thought he was just gone.
Why don't you address it as he
left?
Yeah. You didn't address it as he leaves.
Ezzie's gone to the Kidsport Doug Brown Football Challenge. I'd say there's even odds he won't be here next week.
Didn't Ezzie feel? Wasn't it necessary for Ezzie to at least tell the listeners that he was leaving?
You would think so, but we'll do that on for his behalf, and we could get to make fun of him as a result by. He may have said it actually off the start of the show now that they mentioned
it. I want to get more clarification, Drew, because Murray played in the AHL last year, so wouldn't this be the second pro season that he had?
Well, Hellebuck played in the AHL last year.
That's true.
Yeah, no, I think it's NHL season if I'm not... I mean, again, the NHL really does need to come out with these rules so that people... Never mind us, but how about the general manager so that they can make plans?
I think that might be a factor. Getting to the Nashville thing...
Yeah.
I mean, Ezzie disagrees with me, but I had said I don't think Weber is the player that he was before.
Sure.
And that's my opinion. I think Yossi's better than him. That doesn't mean Shea Weber is a bad defenseman. Mm-hmm. I think he's maybe not as good as he... I don't think he's as good as he was before. Still a good defenseman. That was a very difficult... Now, Yossi was also on for all those goals. That was a difficult performance in that seventh game. That team overall, give them credit for being resilient, for sure. And I thought the key to the Nashville Predators season was as much the inclusion of Arvidsson and Salamaki as anything else.
The ejection of youth and speed that those guys bring
to
the table.
Youth, speed, those players add different elements, one being a scorer, one being more of a checking player. The depth aspect of that, obviously Colin Wilson's emergence in the playoffs after a season where he appeared to be on the market for long stretches of time.
He was atrocious.
Pekka Rinne is kind of unpredictable goaltending, and there's a lot of good things there, I think, that came for Nashville, and that was a successful season.
Sure.
I think the expectations were different than they were in San Jose. But what do you do about Shea Weber, Drew? I mean, Shea Weber's not going anywhere.
No, he's not. And it's not like he's a boat anchor on that back end.
Maybe I shouldn't say he's not going anywhere. You never know in this league.
That's true. He's not the Shea Weber that got the contract offer from the Philadelphia Flyers in the offer sheet back in the day.
To me, he's not. So he has a poor game. Sure, he has a poor game, but he's not Drew Doughty.
Sure, and he is under contract for another 10 seasons.
Well, yeah,
So, I mean, at $7.8 million per year on a cap hit. So, like you said, never say never. But that's a guy. Shea Weber is a player who's got an absolute ton of miles on him. He'll be 31 at the start of next season. He's already played. I mean, he's almost at 763 regular season games. So, it's tremendous amount of hockey, tremendous amount of wear and tear, and big, big time minutes. So, I don't think I'd want Shea Weber for another 10 years at $7 million on my books.
I guess my question is, do you want any player for 10 years? You can't even do that anymore.
You can't do it anymore because it's protecting the general managers from themselves.
From themselves, that's right.
Yeah, so probably not is the answer to your question unless they're 20. Particularly not if they're 30. Rory, are you telling us to get out?
Yeah, Rory. Was that Pantera? What'd you throw out there?
What was that?
Is that Ezzy's theme music at this kid sport thing?
Yeah, does he have theme music?
We came in sweatpants this morning, which is not unusual.
Well, I mean, both you and I didn't really bat an eye at that. We're like, it's sort of standard operating procedure. You show up in sweatpants.
I think maybe, before the kids start running and doing a 40-yard dash.
Five-yard dash?
He'll run a 10-4 40-yard dash.
10 minutes, 40 seconds is what you mean.
Yeah. But he's running he's running the 40-yard dash, comes in sweatpants with a box of Timbits, eats some Timbits, and then throws down some brownies.
And some meringues.
Yeah. That's a pregame meal.
He did, I believe, wash it down with a double cheeseburger last night after dinner.
Last night after the game, he apparently got a quarter pounder with cheese.
Oh, it was a quarter pounder with cheese. Yes. So
let's be generous. Let's be accurate,
Yeah. So he's in peak midseason form, saying.
He's not going to feel bad at all after that workout.
Good luck to everybody at that Doug Brown Kids Sport Media Challenge today. And, just somebody take care of Ezzy. That's really what we're looking for.
Dude, you must have been offended. You weren't invited to the Kids Sport Challenge.
You were invited, too.
I'm just wondering if you were offended.
Why would I be offended?
I mean, you don't have better moves than Ezzy on the football field?
We were all invited. You and I are loyal to the show. We had to finish the broadcast. Ezzy didn't waste a second of getting off air.
Who gave Ezzy permission to even attend the kids' sport? Like, did he ask for permission? It should be a vote, a three-man vote.
Like, see if he's okay leaving the show. Like, what happens if you had somewhere to be or I had somewhere to be?
It should be a vote, the three of us. Yeah. And Ezzy would have voted for going, and then I would have voted for him going, too.
There you go. Let's head to break. When we come back, we discuss the Washington Capitals and the New York Islanders. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The only thing I've processed is that it sucks. And obviously it stinks losing, but knowing that someone else, another team, got the better of you is very, very frustrating. And handshake line, looking at people moving on, something that'll drive me for next year.
Washington Capitals winger Justin Williams about the disappointment in losing in Game 6 to the Pittsburgh Penguins, the Capitals season. They were the best team in the regular season all season long. Ends, like so many previous Washington Capitals seasons, with disappointment. They lose out in the second round to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Pete Zedlacker is in town. It's his final night in town after a tremendous week. The 7:15 p.m. show is sold out. There's a few tickets left for 10 o'clock. Get on it real quick. RumorsComedyClub.com is the website. I know a number of our Illegal Curve OT pool winners have been enjoying Pete's comedy all week long. So get on that if you haven't been victorious in the ICOT pool. Check it out, RumorsComedyClub.com. Go visit Pete Zedlacker later on tonight. The Capitals, Rich, a disappointing year like so many previous years for that team. Can't get over that Game 6 defeat. They lose in overtime to the Penguins. After one of the most fascinating games ever, the Penguins take those three delay of game penalties in a row, something which I don't think they could try to do, again, if they put their minds to it. It's obviously a disappointing year. Is it an unsuccessful year from the Capitals' perspective?
I think from the Capitals' perspective, it is. I mean, you had a really dominating performance. You played very few meaningful games after January, having solidified yourself at the top of the league. You came in with expectations of going to the Stanley Cup Finals and winning the Cup. And losing in the Stanley Cup Finals would have been a very difficult season. I think losing in the Conference Finals would have been pretty difficult. Losing in the second round,
yeah,
that's like,
especially
that,
to their
that just makes it even more difficult than that. And you know, Pittsburgh's a good team, and they played tremendously well down the stretch. Okay, no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. But the Washington Capitals, the expectations were different all season long. They were getting ready and primed for the playoffs, and maybe they had too much time to think about it and do all that. Maybe they should have had better fortunes in some of those games, but they didn't. And maybe Kuznetsov was generating chances, but he didn't put the puck into the back of the net. Sure. Didn't create. Backstrom didn't create enough. And sure, they had lucky goals by Holtby, and the series could have gone the other way, but
didn't.
Ifs and you know, too many ifs, and that's a difficult thing for the Capitals to handle and stomach. And I look up the middle on that squad, and they just didn't get enough. They didn't get enough production from the center position.
Backstrom, Kuznetsov,
Richards and Beagle.
I mean, Backstrom and Kuznetsov. That's where you're looking at there.
I didn't think Richards was keeping up well enough. He just can't skate as well as, and he was never the best skater, but he's slowed down to me. Mm-hmm. He's having trouble keeping up against the Penguins' pace. And you talk about top nine. I know there's depth there on the Capitals, but top nine. And who's playing up the middle for Pittsburgh?
Sure.
Beniel played really well. Crosby and Malkin. The Capitals just didn't play as well up the middle. And sure, Murray was great. And Sullivan's done a great job. And this is not to take credit away from Pittsburgh, because Pittsburgh deserves all the credit. And so resilient in that game six there with all the penalties, yeah. Only allowing the one goal.
Sure.
And then coming back, and after Beagle saving the puck off the red line, still coming back and scoring with Bonino. And that line being so good.
They would not be denied, is what you're saying.
Would not be denied. And they were the better team in overtime. Were clearly the better team in overtime.
The ice was tilted.
And let's be honest, if Hopi doesn't make a couple of tremendous saves at the end of the second, beginning of the third, Washington's down 4-5-0 probably.
Sure.
So, and I have no issue with Hopi, but it's not, you're not, the center position is one that would, to me, bears the most responsibility, but you can't put your finger at one guy, and you don't blow it up here.
Sure.
You can't blow it up. Team's too good.
There's nothing to blow up, really.
No, I think we talked, Drew. We talked about the back end, mm-hmm. at the deadline. They didn't. They had Orpik miss those games. And I know Orpik's not the best defenseman in the league by any means, but he's, you know, your solid stay-at-home guy. But the back end on Washington, I thought, could have used one more pretty solid player. Not a superstar. Would it have made a difference? Maybe. I thought they could use that one more player, and at the deadline, they probably ought to have gone out and got him.
Sure. And do you think Brian McClellan looks at in the offseason?
I do. Maybe it was Dan Hamels. Maybe he wouldn't go.
Sure.
But even somebody else, to give them a little bit more depth on the back end, you know, I thought some of the youngsters at times bore a little bit too much responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could have been a difference maker. You know, sure, you could talk about the Capitals, and maybe they want to get a faster skater or two up front. Okay. I mean, you're nitpicking. Look how good this team was. But that's what I'm looking at. Maybe a little speed up front and another guy in the back end.
Just a slight retool.
Yes.
Certainly not.
Yes.
But I mean, because there's no reason to not think they won't be back as a dominant force next year.
Right. I mean, you know, we're talking about the center position, but Backstrom and Kuznetsov, one could argue, is the best 1-2 punch in the National Hockey League at the center position.
Sure.
That's why, to me, I look at that and I go, yeah, come on, where were you?
Where you guys needed to be better. You guys needed to take that team on your shoulders. The other team in the Eastern Conference that didn't get it done to move on to the conference finals, the New York Islanders. This is a team that has a lot more upheaval ahead of it this offseason than the Capitals. We mentioned it right off the top of the show when we were discussing Travis Hamonic rescinding his trade request. Well, that's a good thing, because Garth Snow has his work cut out for him in that Kyle Okposo, Franz Nielsen, and Matt Martin, all three are UFAs. All three are going to be looking for significant raises, because they've been playing really on bargain deals for the last number of years. And so how do you think Garth Snow handles those three contract negotiations? Is there one guy of the three that you say that's the most important guy that they need to bring back?
That's a really good question.
I'm just asking. I'm Nielsen's, using up all my good questions.
Nielsen's
today.
32, Drew.
Yeah.
I really like his game. He's very versatile. He can play wing, he can play center, he can play power play, plays penalty kill, and he plays effectively in all those spots. His production offensively is taken a little bit of a hit, mm-hmm. and you wonder with his age, you know, how much of a hit that takes. Okposo, what's he going to ask for versus what's he worth is the question. I think out of the three, I think Okposo still, scoring-wise, they need it. So I think he is probably the most important. But Martin is your fourth-line guy, but he complements that tremendously valuable fourth line, and one that Jack Capuano relies on to roll four lines all the time with Cizikas and Clutterbuck.
They just go out and hit everything in sight.
Yeah, and they're reliable fourth line, and they play in, you know, he'll play the penalty kill, so there's more value there. But is he worth $3 million, which is a rumor? Probably not. So you wonder what happens there. I do think for the Islanders, though, you know, you're probably going to get a bargain re-signing of Strome here because of how bad of a season he had. So they have some flexibility, but you have new owners coming in.
Sure.
So I think they have to go out and they have to bring in some free agents as well. Now they have Matthew Barzal, who's just finished his series against the Brandon Wheat Kings playing for Seattle. I've heard very good things about.
Sure.
But how much responsibility is he going to thrust himself into the lineup next season? Mm-hmm. What's the responsibility going to be like that? Not the biggest guy.
Sure. They have Michael Dal-Cole if he ever.
Dal-Cole as well.
Know, he's another former high first round pick. So it is going to be a bit of a season of transition for the New York Islanders.
Yeah. Now,
what about their goaltending position?
Well, I mean, you heard Gar Snow say that Thomas Greiss has proved that he's in the competition there for a spot. Halak sign next year. You're locked into both those guys for a combined $6 million. I think you ride it out and you're fine with it. The way Greiss played, you should feel fine with your goaltending.
Did you see the goal he gave up in the World Hockey Championships?
I didn't, but the World Hockey Championships, I wouldn't be worried about that.
Sure.
The back end, you'd probably want to add one more guy there, too. I mean, Pulak should take another step.
Yeah, but Marek Zadlicki played, you know, gave you more than you can expect for a guy who's 39 years
old. In Pulak's spot, yeah. Right. I mean, the question is, how much do you want to rely on? Are you happy with Leddy, DeHaan, and Hickey, and Hamonic, Boychuk, or Boychuk, Hamonic, and Pulak? I mean, that, you can go into the next year's season feeling fine about that. I wonder if they want to add a little more on the left side.
Sure, just another sort of depth piece to
maybe more than a depth piece.
Okay, well, yeah. Then Garth Snell's got his work cut out for him. And, you know, he doesn't get enough credit as general manager.
No,
he handled the Hamonic situation very well.
He did handle it professionally. I agree with that. And he didn't ever speak disparagingly about him. And he didn't sell him just because he had to, you know, that's because right. He felt he had to.
He said that my priority is the New York Islanders. It's not necessarily satisfying Travis Hamonic immediately, and it's proven to be a smart move.
But clearly he didn't alienate Travis Hamonic because Hamonic wouldn't want to play there if he had alienated him.
That's right.
So these contracts in the books, though, Drew, I mean, and Garcinoe has done a great job of signing guys to lower deals. You look at Okposo coming off $2.8 million. He's 28 years old. Mm-hmm. Franz Nielsen, $2.75 million at 32 years old. Great bargain deals. The deals that aren't bargains that are going to hurt him is Grabowski with that head injury, $5 million for the next 2 years, and Kuhlman at $4.1 million for the next 2 years, a guy who, I know he had some production in the second round, but is not a second-line left winger.
No, guys, and really, when push comes to shove, you can't necessarily, they seem to disappear and shrink from the big moments.
Yeah, that's fair.
So it'll be interesting to see how Garth Snow handles that and to see how Brian McClellan in Washington make sure that they return back to the upper echelon of, well, we know they could do it in the regular season. The question for the Caps year after year after year is when are they going to do it in the playoffs? And it was another disappointing year for Washington losing out to the Pittsburgh Penguins. When we come back, we look at Ottawa's new head coaching duo. It's Guy Boucher and Mark Crawford. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel and Richard Pollock join you in studio. Ezra's somewhere, we're not sure where. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. Our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is illegalcurve.com. Ottawa Senators made a coaching hire this week. They sort of made two coaching hires, if you really consider it. Guy Boucher named the new head coach of the Senators, getting another opportunity behind the bench. His previous time was with the Tampa Bay Lightning, where he led the Lightning in two-plus seasons to a 97-78-20 record. For a brief period of time, he was a revolutionary head coach in the NHL, but apparently he became an idiot very, very quickly. He also has an associate head coach that got hired alongside Mark Crawford, former Stanley Cup winning coach, both of whom had coached recently in Switzerland, come back to North America to be behind the bench of the Ottawa Senators. What do you say about this, Rich? What do you think about this sort of combination head coach, associate head coach? Do you see Boucher and Crawford working well together as a tandem? Is this what Ottawa needed, a team that really never has had much consistency and stability behind the bench?
I like the hire.
Okay.
I think Guy Boucher is a pretty sharp guy. He's going to bring in a structure to the team. Some will say it's too structured based on his past NHL experience, but a structure to the team that Ottawa really seemed to lack last year. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of young players, a lot of skilled players, not the most physical team, so taking away space with that speed I think will be important. I'm happy to see him get a second chance. You know, the problem in Tampa Bay was getting along with some players at the end of his tenure there, especially veterans like Marty St. Louis. So hopefully he can get along with some of the top players in Ottawa, and that's kind of a key to coaching in any sport these days.
Sure.
You need to be able to at least have the respect. I'm not saying they didn't respect him in Tampa, but there were some concerns there, respect, or at least having the players listen to you.
Yeah. Try not to alienate everybody.
Yeah, that's a thing. So I like that they went this way. I think it's a coach with some upside, or the team with some upside. Bringing in Mark Crawford is an interesting move. I think, you know, some say, oh, Crawford will eventually take over, and this is kind of a bad setup. I don't look at it that way necessarily. I look at it from a guy who's been coaching for many years in the pros, been with more than a few teams in the National Hockey League, being able to take a little bit of the pressure off Boucher at times and provide him with a little bit of guidance. I think because Boucher and him were hired at the same time, rather than like a Paul McClain with Bruce Boudreau, you know, hucked in there after.
Sure.
A little bit more of an awkward situation where you see maybe it's the guy who takes over, whereas here they're coming at it together. So I don't think they'll look at it that way.
Do you think that the Senators, you know, said to Boucher, you know, we're going to hire you, we want you to be our head coach, but we also want to bring in Mark Crawford? Do you think that they were sort of on the same page?
I would think so.
Yeah. If they shoehorn him in after he takes the job, it's very awkward.
Right.
And you wonder if they, you know, maybe the two of them, and I don't know, you know, their ties to Switzerland over the last number of years, maybe they formed a coaching bond to some degree.
May have.
And, you know, which would certainly, I mean, nobody's saying Mark Crawford isn't a very, you know, doesn't have the best of intentions here, certainly, and isn't a very smart hockey mind, because he is, because you're not a head coach for that many years.
That's right.
without having some knowledge behind you. The associate head coach role is just always a little bit, you know, especially in Ottawa where you have such a shoot from the hip sort of owner in Eugene Melnyk. You wonder if
you really wonder how Dorion handles the team, though, Drew. I mean, this is the thing. That's why
Pierre Dorion, the new general manager.
You don't really know a lot about him. First thing he does is hires Guy Boucher. I think that's a progressive move.
Sure,
I like that move. So let's see how it works. Will Melnyk be as involved as he was before? I don't know. You're dealing with a new player here.
Sure.
Brian Murray's not running the team anymore.
He's certainly not. So do you think is this the tandem that's going to change that identity sort of in Ottawa? I mean, we know that they were a fun team to watch because they only played offense. They had no defensive, they didn't care about the defense side of things at all.
That's right.
So are Boucher and Crawford the tandem to sort of refocus the players that the responsibility to the back end does need to exist?
Yes, and I think that's where you get to structure. If you just took the team as it is now and implemented some structure, I think you could rein in those goals against. You still need players, too, to help with that, Drew. But that's a big thing that Guy Boucher had in Tampa Bay, with structure. And some would argue too much structure.
Sure.
But I think this team needs too much structure rather than no structure right now. You need a little bit more buy-in. You probably need a little more size up front to be able to defend a little bit better, but they'll probably make sure that their structure and defensive play is built on speed and taking away time and then transitioning out of that with a quick group. And that's what they need to do. They can't have someone, you know, one of the things you saw with Ottawa a lot of the time last year were massive gaps between forwards and defensemen and the ability to create a lot of speed against them and chasing the puck and pushing it too quickly and having too many guys join the rush. That stuff is going to have to stop for the most part. Will it be as exciting? No. But will it be more effective? I think so.
In terms of and wins and losses are truly all that matters, so fans will be happy
yes.
in Ottawa particularly. And if they win more games and they win them in a more structured approach, they'll be perfectly okay with that.
And I think it's a pretty appealing job. I do. Some will say maybe not. You mentioned Melnick being a wild card, probably not spending a ton of money. Mm-hmm. That's fine. You know, your goaltenders are pretty solid. Mm-hmm. You have Erik Karlsson back there. You have some forwards who you can work with.
Sure.
You know, you have guys with speed and young players. It's interesting. You know, Mike Hoffman was a guy who really fell out of favor with Dave Cameron
yeah.
and apparently some attitude issues. But he has a history, actually, with Guy Boucher, having coached him in the Q.
Okay.
So
we know Mike Hoffman brings it on the offensive side of it. I mean, 5-on-5, he's one of the most prolific 5-on-5 yes. scorers in the league,
yeah.
in fact, sort of under the radar.
You have him, he's a great skater. You have Zibanejad. So you have a bunch of guys who can, who you know, you have Mark Stone. Compliment guys, you know, him and Stone and Ryan, not the best skaters, but great hands. I mean, you have pieces there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the dominant superstar up front? No. But you have the dominant superstar on the back end, and you have pretty solid goaltending. So this is a job, and the expectations are not high right now. They're not. You need to get better.
Sure.
Step-by-step improvement, I think, is the reasonable expectation, especially considering the lack of success with Canadian franchises right now. There's no, oh, we're the only team out of the playoffs. We need to, you know, every team's out of the playoffs. Every team needs to get better. And there's a little bit of patience, I think, running through the Canadian fans that wasn't there before.
Sure. And Ottawa's a team, I think, that you could see bounce back. I mean, it's not like this is a rebuilding situation. They, to your point, they do have some nice pieces there. You know, Cody Ceci, you expect, would probably even get better with another year of experience under his belt. And he had a very solid year. You know, put him there with Erik Karlsson. I think things in Ottawa probably are looking up. What do you take, you know, do you take any of the conversation that, you know, the Sens actually offered the job to Boudreau and he turned them down? Do you
think true? That's not what Dorion said, though.
Well, he's not going to say that, but there were suggestions over the weekend that the Senators offered the job to Boudreau and then he decided to go with the Wild, that he chose to go with the Wild over the Senators. Now, is that fact or not? I don't know. Ian Mendez sort of addresses that in his column on TSN.ca. The question is, you know, to the point about Melnick sort of not necessarily wanting to open up the purse strings, was the money better in Minnesota versus Ottawa? I don't know.
Maybe it was. I still think this hire makes more sense for Ottawa.
Yeah. Do you think that this hire makes
yes,
more sense?
I do.
Really?
I do. I think it's a better fit for Ottawa than Boudreau would have been.
Are you down on Boudreau?
I'm not down on Boudreau. I just think Boudreau, I mean, the fact that his teams have lost so many game sevens, I think, is a reflection on him. I don't think it means he's a bad coach. I think he's a good coach. You can't coach and win that many divisions and not be a good coach. And certainly teams like St. Louis, San Jose are proving that some of their past, you can get over it.
Sure.
Having said that, I don't think the two jobs that were available that he was interviewed for in that short period of time, there's other jobs that are available,
sure.
were jobs that were best suited to him.
Fair enough. It's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Riverview Health Center Cycle on Life. We're proud supporters of that great event coming up. The chairperson of the cycle joins us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That's coming up next. You're listening to TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
One final segment this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel and Richard Pollock join you here in studio. The final segment is brought to you by the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life. Illegal Curve is thrilled to be participating in the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life. Join IC on June the 5th in raising money for the Riverview Health Center's Alzheimer and Dementia Awards by cycling in the event or contributing to Team Illegal Curve.
For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life, we're pleased to be joined by the chairperson of that fantastic event, Michael Erlinger. Michael, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us to talk about the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life.
Thank you both. It's great to have the pleasure to be on the show.
Yes, Michael, thank you so much. You know, we've been talking about the Foundation Cycle on Life for much of the last, you know, few months, and we're sort of ramping up. We're really into the go time, as we're about 3 weeks away. It's 3 weeks tomorrow, I believe, taking place starting at the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life. So to our audience who, you know, might be hearing about it for the first time or might be wanting some more information, you know, what is the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life all about?
Well, good question. A lot of people may not be familiar with it, but are familiar with a number of rides, charity rides that happen throughout the summer. But this is a really fun, family-oriented ride. It's in its 18th year, and for the last 17 years, we've raised in excess of $1.5 million to go toward the foundation. It's a two-part ride. We have two options on this day. We have a 25-kilometer ride and a 65-kilometer ride. So we have two options, one geared toward family and kids, and the other geared towards a little bit more of the serious rider.
Well,
Ezzy's going to do the 65-kilometer ride. Drew and I will just do the 25.
Yeah, we'll stay at 25 kids. That's more up our alley, Michael. So, you know, the Riverview Health Center, you know, it is obviously a hospital. It's a medical facility here in Winnipeg, but it might be a little bit under the radar as compared to some of, you know, either the Children's Hospital or the Health Sciences Center, the St. Boniface Hospital. You know, can you talk to us a little bit about the Riverview Health Center and sort of why it's such a special facility here in the province of Manitoba?
Absolutely. I think it's one of those rare jewels, and it's probably very hidden in terms of how people know about it. I think it's been known for so long for its palliative care, but it does so much more. It provides Alzheimer's and dementia. It does long-term care, stroke rehabilitation, brain injury rehab. Aside from the fact that it is in an absolutely beautiful setting, for the people who have seen it, it's almost like a park. It's a beautiful place if you have to be there.
Michael Erlinger joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Riverview Health Center Cycle on Life, a fantastic charity event coming up on June the 5th. Now, Michael, you know, as much as we'd like to say we're the most famous people participating in the event, that's probably not the case, as you've made a partnership or have been in partnership with the Winnipeg Blue Bomber alumni for the last number of years. So can you sort of tell our audience a little bit about the connection between the Blue Bomber, the Winnipeg Blue Bomber alumni, and the Riverview Health Center Cycle on Life?
Absolutely. We have become partners with them in this event. They are, as we all know, they're very popular, and they have become a great sponsor for us in that they realize and they appreciate the work that Riverview has done in terms of treating head injuries, brain injuries, because, as we know, it's a rough sport, and we're trying to relate that to the research that they do with Alzheimer's and dementia. So that, in terms of research and developing programs, it's a terrific partnership. And it with their notoriety, it gets people out for this event, and it gives people an opportunity to socialize and ride with the Blue Bombers.
I'm sure they'll have some great stories to tell about their football days. Now, Michael, you're not only a participant in the cycle, and you've been a participant for the last number of years, you're also a board member. You're the chairperson of the board for this event at the Riverview Health Center. Why, personally, why is this fundraiser, why is the Riverview Health Center so important to you that you've decided to put your time and your efforts behind this fantastic charitable event?
Well, I think it started. I'll share a little bit of a story with you. I came from California 7 years ago. We moved up here with our family, and I was introduced to a gentleman named Sheldon Mandel. I don't know if you know him or not, or I think you do.
The name rings a bell.
I think you know him, and he is a cyclist, I'm a cyclist, and he asked me if I would want to participate in this ride with the summer coming up, my first summer here, so I did, and that led me to being asked to be on the committee, and that led me to be asked to be chair of the committee, and then that led to a board member position. So it really wasn't a connection, a direct connection with Riverview. However, the more I've gotten involved, and I can understand this because I work with a terrific committee on this event and a terrific group of board members on the foundation. The more you get involved with the center, the more you just appreciate what it does and what it offers and how wonderful it is. And it's one of these places that you hope you never have to use, but if you do, it's a marvelous facility, and it kind of grows on you.
Now, obviously, it's free to register for anybody that wants to go on to rhcf.mb.ca. You can follow the links to register for the Riverview Health Center Cycle on Life. But what commitment are riders asked to make for the event? It is a fundraiser, after all. The funds going to the Alzheimer and Dementia Wards at Riverview Health Center. So what commitment are anybody that signs up to participate asked to make?
Well, we've switched up the rules a little bit this year. Until this year, it was always a free member or a free registration. But this year, we decided to ask riders to commit a little bit. So if you're under the age of 14, we've asked for a $25 registration fee. And if you're over the age of 14, we've asked for a $100 registration fee. And this is just a registration fee, but we certainly ask and promote, other fundraising efforts, pledges from family and friends, donors. There are a number of prizes that we give out. If you bring a new rider to the event, and if you're an old or a past rider, you're entered into a contest to win a $500 gift certificate from Olympia Cycle. We have a wonderful barbecue / brunch after the event, free massage. The lineup is incredible for that. Everyone wants that after a ride. So it's really a fun morning, and by 1 or 1:30 that afternoon, everyone is on their way home, to enjoy the rest of the weekend. So it's not a full-day commitment.
It sounds terrific. Those of us here at Illegal Curve were, of course, thrilled to be participating. We're going to sweeten the pot courtesy of our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Anybody who joins Team Illegal Curve, you're going to win some tickets to some hockey upcoming in the 2016-17 season. So if you join Team Illegal Curve, again, follow rhcf.mb.ca to get there. We'll have an opportunity to win some hockey tickets for the upcoming NHL season.
That's Michael, great. Thank you so much for that.
Michael, you're the chairperson. You're doing a fantastic event, a fantastic job. The event is coming up on June the 5th. Really appreciate your time this morning. Thank you for joining us to talk about the Riverview Health Center Cycle on Life.
Yeah, thank you both very much for having us on, and we appreciate your efforts, and we look forward to seeing as many people as we can on that Sunday.
Absolutely. Coming up Sunday, June the 5th, come join Team Illegal Curve as we participate in the Riverview Health Center Cycle on Life. That's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our guests. You just heard from Michael Erlinger, chairperson, Riverview Cycle on Life, Ray Ratto from CSNBayArea.com, Andy Strickland from Fox Sports Midwest, Mike Colligan from Forbes.com, and Eric Erlinson, Tampa Bay Lightning beat writer. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on TSN1290.ca, on IllegalCurve.com. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Rory, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for World Hockey Championship Hockey Canada in action next here on TSN 1290.